hello, everybody, and welcome to the Dennis Prager Show, where we really do talk about everything in life. Leaving the news for some moments here, I have on the line David Walsh. Dr. David Walsh is a practicing psychologist, president and founder of the National Institute on Media and the Family. He has a new book out titled No. I remember there was one writer who raised kids, who talked about raising kids and who also raised kids. He called it vitamin N. I have always recalled that. Kids need that as much as vitamin D, vitamin C, and so on. Why kids of all ages need to hear it in ways parents can say it. Why is no so important? And even if your kids are grown, this is a vital subject. I talked about this the other day, about how we don't want kids to feel bad. We have raised a generation where we change the score in games. That's my column this week. You should see that on the on townhall.com. My column is about the whole issue of changing the score from 24 to 7 to 0 to 0, which I talked about yesterday in the baseball game of a friend's son. Anyway, Dr. David Walsh, welcome to the Dennis Prager Show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
How do you know it's a pleasure? I mean, are you...
Well, we talked about 2 years ago when my book, Why Do They Act That Way, came out. It was a great interview, and I've been looking forward to this one ever since.
Well, I was wondering if you remembered that. That's very nice of you. Where are you located?
I'm in Minneapolis.
A terrific market for this program, actually.
Yeah.
All right, my friend, Dr. Dave, you wrote a book titled No. Why would you write a whole book on the word no?
The short version, Dennis, is that no is the road to yes. No, it's not so much the word as it is the concept, because, as you know, there are 1,000 ways to say no without ever using the word. But what is important is that kids learn limits. They learn that other people's needs are as important as their own. They need to learn how to delay gratification, be patient. All of those are the ingredients of the key critical success factor for kids, which is self-discipline. And that's why no is so important, because no helps us learn the lessons of self-discipline, build that skill, develop or take in huge quantities of that vitamin N, as you suggested, which I love, because that's what's going to make them happy and successful in school and in life.
All right, so the question poses itself, why is the book even necessary? Isn't this obvious to parents?
No.
See, I got you to say no.
the problem is that we live in a yes culture. You know, as you may know, I've spent a lot of years studying the impact of mass media, electronic media, on all of us. And the media have been very, very successful in promoting 4 important cultural values: more, easy, fast, and fun. We're constantly told that whatever we have, we should have more of it. We're constantly told that everything should be easy and fast. I shouldn't have to wait for anything. And we're constantly told, and you referenced this in your introduction, we're constantly told that everything should be fun. The problem is that the more easy, fast, and fun culture has contributed to what I call an epidemic of DDD, discipline deficit disorder. And the symptoms of discipline deficit disorder are the inability to delay gratification, a culture of disrespect, impatience, a sense of entitlement, and those I think are epidemic, and I think we're seeing signs of that all around us. And very, very important that we reverse this, because discipline deficit disorder eats away at that core trait of self-discipline. So, for example, research shows that self-discipline is twice as strong a predictor of success in school as intelligence.
I love it. Where do I find that?
That's the Duckworth and Seligman study that came out about 14 months ago now. And the reference is in the book, no. So you'll see actually that referenced in the back, Dennis. The exact reference.
I want my listeners to forgive me that I have to italicize what Dr. Walsh just said. Self-discipline is, did you say twice?
Twice as strong a predictor of school success as intelligence.
And later success.
And later success, absolutely. I mean, self-discipline is the core strength that we need to persist at task, to carry through when something's difficult, to harness our own impulses and urges so that they're not out of control ruling us. One of the things that I try to explain in the book, why kids need it, is also to base it on the brain science that we come hardwired with different drives. And it's a good thing that we do, you know, because those drives are very, very important, and we come pre-equipped with those. So, for example, the fight or flight response. We also come equipped with a drive to seek pleasure. And there's nothing wrong with that. It helps us stay alive. The problem is that now the culture has taken one of those drives, and I identify six of them in the book. One of those drives, the drive to seek pleasure, they've taken it off the list, put it at the top of the list, underlined it, put it in caps, italicized it, and put a spotlight on it and says, this is more important than anything else. And so what happens is that things then get out of balance. And, you know, the analogy that I use in the book is that these drives are like a team of horses. And what I have to do as I'm growing up is that I have to learn how to harness and manage those horses. Because if I'm in control, they can take me to great places. But if they're in control, if the drive to seek pleasure is in control, I'm going to end up in the ditch. And the problem is that children don't learn that on their own. They outsource it. And who they outsource it to is us, parents, teachers, coaches, scout leaders, all of the people that have the responsibility to provide guidance for our kids, and the way that we help them build that is through the lessons of no.
How did this go awry, or did it? In other words, I don't know what generation, you and I are probably similar in age, I don't know, but are you a baby boomer?
I'm actually a pre-baby boomer. I'm 61.
Oh, so you're older than me.
So I was born a year before the boom.
Okay, big deal. So
yeah, right.
What happened?
I think two things happened, Dennis. One is that I think that the constant drumbeat of more easy, fast, and fun has taken a toll. See, my mother and probably your parents, my parents and your parents perhaps, and the parents of many listeners, had an easier time saying no in previous generations. And it's not because they were necessarily better parents. They had a culture supporting the lessons of no. Today, we live in a yes culture. So the more easy, fast, and fun has become a virus that many of us have kind of unconsciously kind of caught. And so, you know, fun, for example, a lot of people have almost developed an allergic reaction to their kids being unhappy. And so what happens then is they do anything they can to protect their kids from being unhappy. They become nonstop entertainment committees. They get the kids more than they need, in some cases even more than they want. You know, birthday parties become major extravaganzas. And so we do everything that we can to keep our kids happy. And so I think one of the major influences has been the culture of more easy, fast, and fun. The other is that I think what happened is that we took a concept that had been around for a long time, and the concept is self-esteem. And actually, it has been around for a long time. William James wrote about it in 1892. But then what happened is that when we brought it out of the closet, the academic closet, and dusted it off, in the 70s and early 80s, what we did is we changed the definition. And in the book, No, I talk about the three myths of self-esteem. And the first myth is the mistake that we made in defining self-esteem as feeling good. Self-esteem and feeling good are two different things. And once we started to define self-esteem as feeling good about myself, then that led to the second myth. And the second myth...
Well, before we go to the second...
Yep.
if self-esteem does not mean feeling good about oneself, what does it mean?
Self-esteem is an accurate reflection. The analogy that I use in the book, No, is that self-esteem is like a mirror. And what I want to do is I want self-esteem to reflect back my strengths, my weaknesses, and so it's a realistic appraisal and acceptance.
All right. We're going to hear the other two as well. David Walsh, my guest, the book, No. He makes a great deal of sense. That's why I'm having him on again. 1-8-PRAGER-776 is the number of the Dennis Prager Show. You're listening to the Dennis Prager Show, indeed. David Walsh, Dr. Walsh, is my guest, psychologist, president of the National Institute on Media and the Family. His new book, Vital, Unfortunately Vital, is titled No, Why Kids, and Emphasize of All Ages Need to Hear It and Ways Parents Can Say It. There were times in the life of my children when I actually saw them happier when they heard no.
Exactly, and that I think is a really important point, Dennis, is because, you know, earlier I said, no was not the destination, no is the road to yes. The really happy and successful kids, and eventually happy and successful adults, are the ones who really kind of are in charge of their own life, who aren't driven by, who aren't controlled by out-of-control drives. And as I said earlier, we don't learn that automatically when we're young. We outsource it. And we outsource it to the adults, the parents, the teachers, the scout leaders, the youth leaders at church, who really help us develop that self-discipline, because that's what's going to make us happy.
Yep, indeed. Now, you were talking about, what was it, three myths?
The three myths of self-esteem.
Go ahead.
And we talked about the first one. The first myth is self-esteem is feeling good, and that's not true. They're two different things. The second...
Well, so again, on that one, it is an accurate mirroring of
yes.
who you are?
Yeah.
Well, what
and,
if who you are isn't much?
With the analogy of mirror for just a second, Dennis, when we're constantly telling our kids how special they are and how unique and, regardless of their effort or achievement, then what we're doing is we're giving them a funny mirror. They're looking into a funny mirror, and eventually they're going to get a distorted notion of themselves and their own importance.
I couldn't agree more, but let me ask the question on the other end.
Yep.
Is there a problem that some have with low self-esteem?
We don't want to – I'm glad you asked the question, because I'm not saying that we want to be hypercritical of kids or put them down.
No, even without being hypercritical,
yep.
aren't there kids and indeed adults who have low self-esteem?
Whose opinions of themselves are unrealistically bad.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely there are. And so what we want to do is we want to give our kids an accurate mirror. We don't want to give them a funny mirror in either direction. We don't want to give them a funny mirror that basically puts them down and leads them to believe that they're no good. That's one extreme. The other is also an extreme, and that is the notion that kids are special no matter what they do. Everything is fine. And we're seeing the evidence of that. You may have seen the study that came out of your part of the country 2 weeks ago, Gene Twenge's research at San Diego State,
yep.
showing that kids today are twice as self-centered. That's another way of saying twice as narcissistic as kids in previous generation. That's the accumulated effect of us telling our kids that they're special, that they're unique. I mean, taken to an extreme, there are literally teachers who are told not to use red pencils.
That's right.
Because we don't want kids to feel bad.
Right.
Well, learning how to deal with frustration and disappointment are part of growing up. And unfortunately,
but growing up isn't a great value these days.
Well, and we need to get back to that, because as this conversation goes along, we might even get into some of the prices that we're paying if we don't get things back on track, if we don't reestablish balance.
What were the other myths?
The second myth, and this is one that, amazingly, millions and millions of people think is true. The second myth is that self-esteem, as defined by feeling good about ourselves, okay, so if I feel good about myself, then good things will automatically follow. achievement will follow. I'll be at less risk for drug and alcohol use when I'm a teenager. I'll be at less risk for teen pregnancy. Dennis, there is not one shred of research evidence backing up that myth. In fact, ironically, where if I define self-esteem as feeling good about myself, some of the highest scores are found in prisons.
Where, oh, I know that. I had the guy from Cleveland, a criminologist, who said that. He said his life work with criminals found that overwhelmingly they had higher self-esteem.
Yes.
That's what enabled them to hurt other people.
Exactly.
I'm so terrific, I can mug you.
I can do whatever I want.
Yes.
My needs are number one. Everybody else's needs are a distant second. And you know, that's the unfortunate byproduct of the myths of self-esteem.
What's the third?
The third is that frustration and disappointment damage self-esteem, and that's not true. Frustration and disappointment in appropriate dosage help build it, because what they do is they help me build the inner resources to handle those things. We and your listeners know that life does deal out disappointment. It's inevitable.
The ratio is about 10 to 1, in fact.
There you go. And so, you know, if 10 of us are applying for the same job, well,
yes,
the day,
exactly.
The day it's announced, 9 of us are going to be disappointed.
Yes.
And so if we all just collapse in a heap, you know, it's not, you know, what I need to be able to do is that when things are disappointing, when I'm dealt with a disappointment or I'm dealt with frustration, I need to figure out how to do the old pick myself, dust myself off, and start all over again. And how am I going to learn how to deal with disappointment if I never get any practice?
Well, on that, I have a question here from Jane in Bellflower, California. Hi, Jane. Dennis Prager and Dr. David Walsh.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a question for you. I have 6 children. My oldest daughter is 12. And my question is it too late for her if she's totally narcissistic? She's selfish, she's undisciplined, and I don't know how to turn it around. Is there anything, is she lost?
Jane, can I ask you a question first before I give a response? Has this self-centeredness been going on for a long time, or is it something that has kind of popped up in just the last year or two?
No, I think it's kind of her personality. My other kids don't really have it quite so badly.
Yep. Okay. The answer is it's never too late. One of the reasons that I put in the title of the book, Know Why Children and Then Dash of All Ages Need to Hear It, and ways we can say it, is that it's never too late. The longer a pattern is in place, of course, the more difficult it is to turn it around, but it's never too late to turn it around. And so I think, you know, helping her understand how other people's needs are important
is it
well.
Too late at 22?
Well, I don't know that I want to say it's ever too late, but it sure does get harder as the years go by because, you know, one of the basic principles of brain development is the neurons that fire together wire together. So if we're firing a circuit in our brain for 22 years uninterrupted, it's going to be hard to wire a new one that's going to overtake that first one.
All right. When we come back, I have a question for you that's off topic a drop. But I think about a lot, how important is a happy childhood? It almost sounds silly, but it's not. 1-8-PRAGER-776, the book is No. Welcome back to the Dennis Prager Show. And I have on the Jigsaw Health Newsmaker line, Dr. David Walsh. For answers to your health puzzle, go to jigsawhealth.com. Dr. David Walsh has written now the book No. As the parent of 3, I can't agree with you more, and I reflect on my own bringing up of my children and how important what you say is, and I don't say I followed it all the time. So I speak from both sides of this. It is so essential. It ultimately beats a lot of yeses.
Yeah.
And it's very tough. Parents, here is my theory on a major reason that parents say no less than they used to, and that is the desire to be loved all the time by their children.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Dennis. I think that, you know, that's that the fun part of the more easy, fast, and fun is that our job is to make our kids happy, and we want them to like us. I've since the book has come out, parents have shared with me that, you know, at the end of the day, they pick their kids up from daycare. They have just a couple of hours between dinner and bedtime, and they want it to be pleasant. And so they actually acknowledge, parents have actually said to me, that I know that I am saying yes when I should be saying no. And it's because I want everything to be nice, I want everything to be pleasant, so my kids will be happy. And I think what they're not saying, but I think you just said accurately, so that my kids will like me.
So here's the question then that I posed before the break. I have an almost heretical view on this as I get older. Do you have a theory on the relationship between happy childhood and happy adulthood?
I'm glad that you gave me the question before the break, because it gave me a couple minutes to think about it. And I think your question is an example of how anything can be overdone, including happiness. You know, that there's nothing wrong with kids being happy. We want our kids to be happy, but we have to make sure that we're defining happy correctly. Happy does not mean always having a smile on my face. Happy does not mean always having fun. What we want is our kids to have an inner sense of direction, an inner sense that they're in charge of their own lives, an inner sense of their competence, an inner sense of sensitivity to other people's needs, a sense of responsibility, all of those things. You know, if we were to, as parents, if we were to write down what kind of an adult do we want our kids to become? And that, I think, is a key question. It's a question that I pose in the first chapter of the book, No. We need to take the long view. We're in a very short-term society. And so we take the short-term easy way out. The problem is that the short-term easy way out has long-term negative implications. So if we take the long view, what kind of an adult do we want our kids to be? I think most parents that I talk to say they want their kids to be competent, caring, responsible, have integrity. Those things aren't going to happen unless we guide our kids toward those traits. And that's where self-discipline becomes so important, because I would make the case that self-discipline is key to all of those.
So this is more philosophical even than in the realm of psychology. Here's why I pose it to you, and it's a little outside the spectrum of the book, I know that. But I admire your wisdom, so I'm just posing this to you without an agenda. But as I get older, I am almost seeing an inverse ratio that those who had a more difficult childhood, and I don't mean abused in a closet, locked away, but hard, mm-hmm. and even unhappy.
Yep.
I tend to think that they often become happier adults.
One of those, I think you're right. I think that's true for many people, and I'm really glad that you added the qualifiers.
Well, of course.
We're not talking about abuse.
No,
like
of
that.
Course.
But I think what those kids have learned, what those experiences did, is that it helped kids build those inner resources to overcome those difficulties, to overcome the disappointment, to overcome the frustration. They learned how to take a negative situation and turn it into an opportunity. They learned how to take a dead end and figure out, okay, if that didn't work, I have to figure out another way that will work. All of those are the traits of resiliency.
I wonder if you would hold that, and this is a very hard one for conservatives, I wonder if you would hold that for children of divorce, too. We'll get your response and take more questions. The wonderful book is No, I'm Dennis Prager. Dennis Prager here, and the man on the Jigsaw Health Newsmaker line is Dr. David Walsh, and you have answers to your health puzzle at jigsawhealth.com. Dr. Walsh's book is No. You see how much common sense he has. Common sense, the great gift, the greatest of all gifts. So I am really putting you on the spot here. It comes entirely out of respect for your clarity, which, if you know me, that's a big deal if I think somebody has clarity. And the book, of course, again, is No, and it's so important, so important. And I asked you this great philosophical, almost, the not just psychological question of the ratio or the relationship between happy childhood and happy adulthood is not nearly what people think it is. And I'm a big advocate of happiness, huge. But I'm a bigger advocate of telling the truth. And what I see in the world is that difficult childhoods often lead to happier adulthoods. Would you include in that in any way, or is it, I guess you would say it's a, I assume you'll say it's a mixed bag, children of divorce?
It's a mixed bag.
Right. Okay, that's right. It probably
because
is.
Because it really, of course what's going to be best for kids is to have a stable, secure family where there's predictability. And, in a family where there's a tremendous amount of turmoil and conflict and arguing and fighting and things like that, that's going to be very difficult for kids to develop trust, predictability, et cetera. And yet do some kids come out of that? Where there is a divorce, do some kids come out of that, kind of fine and intact? Absolutely. I've done marriage counseling for years, and I've always said, if there's any way that the two of you can reconcile your differences, that's really going to be the best situation for everybody, especially the kids. But there are situations where, for whatever reason, whether it's alcoholism or drug addiction, the second best solution for everybody is to part ways.
1-8-PRAGER-776. We go to Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and Jennifer. Hi, Jennifer. Dennis Prager and Dr. David Walsh.
Oh, gentlemen, what an honor. Dennis, I've just moved to the Midwest from Los Angeles, where you were a daily part of my car drive. You are a jewel in the Father's crown. God bless
you,
sir.
Wow. Thank you. Thank you. That's so kind.
Jennifer, you might be interested in knowing I was just in Cedar Rapids last week.
Well, great. Maybe that's what connected us here. I just want to say I'm a journalist, and I've worked in public speaking on this topic. It's very near and dear to my heart. I'm the mother of four children. And so, Dr. Walsh, a huge thank you for this book. I think it should be required reading in the maternity room when they're telling us all about car seats and breastfeeding and just what society's definition of good parenting is. The trouble I have as what I call a traditional parent is that when I'm in public with my children, I have a lot of people sort of going against my grain of what I consider to be the no culture. An example is when I introduce my children to an adult, I still insist on them saying,
yes,
sir, mister, ma'am.
And they correct you.
And they'll correct me and
yes.
Say, just call me Bob.
Yeah.
And I say, you know what, we're not calling you Bob because you're an adult, sir, with all due respect. And the, comments I get are, oh, well, I don't want to feel old, et cetera, but it makes it hard on a parent.
Yeah.
I get the same thing if they hand a sticker to my child in the grocery store,
yep.
And I'll say, well, we get the sticker when they've, completed the outing with good behavior. And, it's
yep.
A real upward climb. So I just thought
Jennifer, I completely agree, and that's really one of the big reasons that I wrote the book No, is because it is becoming so, in quotes, countercultural, which is really, really sad. And I share, even in the book, I share some stories where, there was a lot of public, I still remember, I don't want to take a lot of time to go into great detail, but I relate the story where my son, Brian, was not going to get, as a very legitimate consequence, was not going to get a Dairy Queen treat on a summer's night. And it was very clear to him why he wasn't going to get it. Well, of course, when we got down to the Dairy Queen with our other two kids, he wanted an ice cream cone and threw a complete fit in the middle of a busy street. And I just held, I said, Brian, you knew that you weren't going to get an ice cream cone because of what happened. And the woman in front of me turned around and said, how could you do that to that little boy?
Yeah.
It's like, Brian knew what an important lesson that
was. How old was he?
He was three. And that's what the woman said. Do you expect a child that young to understand what you're trying to teach.
Yes, yes.
And the answer is absolutely yes.
Yes.
Jennifer.
Those lessons become very, very important.
Jennifer, you're a joy. Send me an email. I'll know who you are.
You bet. Thank
okay.
You,
thank you very much. Well, here is what I'd like to say to parents. Learn as many things in life, both the easy way and the hard way. The earlier you get this done, the easier it is for you, the parent. I learned this as a camp counselor. If I set the rules the first day or two and work really hard at disciplining the kids, I basically had the rest of the summer as a vacation.
Yep.
And that there's a tremendous amount of truth to that to child rearing. The earlier you set the parameters, the less work you have later. And also, they don't remember their tantrums at three. So there's no psychological price. So it's just a word for the wise parent who was listening here. What's a final thought for people, Dr. David?
Well, I guess, Dennis, I if you're going to give me an opportunity for a final thought, I'd go back to where we began, in that no is not the destination, no is the road to yes. And when our kids can learn the important lesson of self, when our kids can develop the skill of self-discipline, the trait of self-discipline, then they're going to be more successful, more happy. We're going to have a better society, and we're going to have more success.
Well, let me know when you write your next book.
Thanks a million.
Thank you so much. Dr. David Walsh, the book is No. That's the whole title. Why Kids of All Ages Need to Hear It and Ways Parents Can Say It. Some final thoughts from me and some of your calls when we come back on the Dennis Prager Show. The last question that I posed to Dr. David Walsh about his sense of the relationship between happy childhood and happy adulthood is one that I am going to actually do a time about on the show. I'm going to pose that question to you because as I get older, I look at all the people that I know, which is obviously limited. It's all limited in all of our lives. How many people can any one person know personally? As I don't mean people I've read about in the papers, and that I have not found a correlation between happy childhood and happy adulthood. That doesn't mean that you want to give your child an unhappy childhood. but it does mean that we need to rethink this, and I think about happiness a great deal. So it's life is complex. If it weren't, I wouldn't have a radio show to try to unravel it every day. Beth in Huntington Beach, California. Hi, Dennis Prager.
Hello.
Hi.
What an honor to speak to you, Dennis.
Thank you.
Prager.
Thank you so much.
Okay, he's right about the self-discipline. It's my belief. I was raised in a family of abuse, alcoholism, schizophrenia, depression. And there was a Newsweek article that came out February of 26 on men and depression. On page 49, it clearly says that in one research study at Columbia University, researchers found that rates of anxiety disorders and depression were three times as high among the adult children of depressed parents. And that's where I am. It's on and off. It also says that adult children of depressed parents also report about five times the rate of cardiovascular problems.
Mm. Well, now you know part of the reason that I say all the time we have a moral obligation to all those around us to be, or at least act, as happy as possible.
That is correct.
Yes, and the first example I give is to one's children. And I always say, just ask the child of a depressed parent what it was like, and then you understand why I believe it's a moral obligation.
Right, right. But I deal with issues of anxiousness, and I do believe that there is a connection with
right.
my childhood.
Well, very good. I thank you very much. All righty, everybody. There is reason for optimism because, as he points out, it's at any age. It's harder to start when they're 15, but it's not impossible. And it's not even impossible at 21. There is still a time where you can say, you know what, I wish I had said no earlier, but I'm now going to say no now. especially with people not growing up very fast. And they stay somewhat childlike through college. There's always the chance to be true to yourself and say no when necessary. This is Dennis Prager. We continue.